Welcome to Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Shurtleff. This show is heard on WBCQ, The Planet, every Tuesday and Thursday evenings at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can also listen to our show on Podomatic. That's our flagship podcast platform. Also Amazon, Spotify, iHeart, and about a half a dozen or so others. It is brought to you by Camp Constitution Radio, which, among other things, runs a week-long family camp. And this year's camp runs from July 14th to the 19th at the Singing Hills Christian Camp and Conference Center in Plainfield, New Hampshire. And we have a full house. We expect a full house. We've already got about 60 or so signed up. And it's not even in April. Usually we don't start getting applications till April. We also have a ladies retreat that's coming right up, April 12th to the 14th. And that will take place at the Alton Bay Christian Conference Center. And also a weekend retreat coming up in late September. We have events going on all the time. And I'll be giving a number of presentations on the racist roots of Planned Parenthood, the topic of my book. I've got, I think, three or four up in northern Maine, Arista County, coming up later this month, as well as some in New Hampshire and Alton, as well as Concord. Just visit our website, go on to our calendar. I don't think I posted some of those events yet. Also on our Facebook page, and our YouTube channel. We are killing it on our YouTube channel in the last month or so. We've got over 5,000 new subscribers, and that one little video, that 10-minute video of Dan Smoot, Republics and Democracies, it's really going gangbusters. And because people are going to our channel, they're looking at some of the other videos that we've got over 1,000 we posted. Anyway, I want to talk a little bit about this concept of secession. And a bill, it's a proposed amendment here in New Hampshire. And now, first off, I am not in favor of secession. I think a civil war was fought over it. Maybe states can't. Some people argue that states can secede. But 2 years ago, there was a similar proposal in New Hampshire. But this one, it's called CACR 20. And CACR stands for Constitutional Amendment Concurrent Resolution. So in New Hampshire, in order to get an amendment on the state constitution, I think it's a little more difficult than it is for a U.S. amendment. You need 3/5 of the House and Senate to sign off on it, to vote for it. And it's hard to get 3/5. I mean, you really have to have some serious unanimous, almost not unanimous, but a lot of people in favor of it. And then it goes on to the ballot as a referendum, goes on for the next general election, and it has to get 2/3 of the voters to approve before it becomes the in the Constitution. Now, there's a state rep, Jason Gerhardt, Northfield, New Hampshire, who would propose this. And his proposed amendment says that as soon as the states or the nation's national debt reaches $40 billion, that's when the amendment would kick in. And they held hearings recently, and the hearings, I don't think it's going to pass committee. The committee will, you know, vote on it, but then it will, regardless of the committee's findings, it will then eventually, it will go to the full vote in the House, where it will be defeated, most likely. But this is interesting. 2 years ago, there was, as I mentioned, a similar proposal, and I think it got 13 votes. And one of the persons who was a friend of mine voted for it. He said, let it go to the voters. He wasn't in favor of secession, he said. But this is interesting. The people on the left seem to hate this country. They hate almost everything about it. They hate our history. They hate our Constitution. But somehow they use this against some of the people. Most of the people supporting this would be libertarians. And not entirely. But here are these people crying treason or crying secessionist when they hate this country. You would think that they would be in favor of it. You would think that this would be something that the left proposes, not people on the libertarian right. And in fact, my friend here, that's a state rep, Paul Terry, he was called a secessionist, that he was some evil Jeff Davis. He was trying to secede from the union in his kind. He says, "Hey, I'm not in favor of it, but let the voters decide." And of course, it would probably be considered null and void if it ever passed, if it got the two-thirds vote. But again, if you if the lefties who hate this country so much, you think they would love the idea of seceding. Of course, if the lefties who live in New Hampshire hate New Hampshire as much as they hate the United States, because heck, we were one of the 13 original countries, and even though New Hampshire abolished slavery early in its history, it's still intrinsically evil. Everything about this country is evil: our constitution, our history, everything. And this idea of systemic racism, I have to give this some thought. Because I suppose a state with Jim Crow laws, you could say that's a systemic thing, if it's legally, but that stuff's all been repealed. All that's gone, long gone. But we do have systemic racism. It started in the 60s, the Civil Rights Act, when it wasn't supposed to give preference. And by the way, we have to address the term civil rights. Civil rights are rights that government grants. The United States was founded on the concept of God-given rights. The purpose of the Constitution, the purpose of government, is to protect God-given rights. A civil right, something that's been given and can be taken away. I give an example. It might be a loose example, but in Massachusetts has a recreational center they built, and they put it in the Roxbury section of Boston, predominantly black. And this center was used by predominantly blacks for different things, and it was supported by taxpayers' money. And then the state said, "We got to put illegal aliens or migrants in there now. Sorry, all of you people that have been using this for recreation and learning how to swim and computers and basketball and all the other things that people do. Recreational activities, not just recreation, but also learning. It was a learning center. And by the way, recreation is a good thing. Recreate, that's where it comes from. So they said, no, you don't have the right to use this anymore. We've taken that away from you." So there's sort of probably a loose example of how a state can take away the rights. You can say you have a right to recreation. And by the way, you do have lots of rights that aren't mentioned in the Constitution. And it says so. Anyway, I'm getting back to secession, so again, I'm not in favor of secession, but I am in favor of statehood, for parts, certain states to break, certain areas of states to break away from the major, from the state, and then form a separate state. Now, the left wants to make Washington, D.C. into a state, and also Puerto Rico. And I think Puerto Rico has voted against statehood. Because as a territory, they have special privileges. I don't think they don't pay income tax. They have all the rights of citizens, except they don't vote in a federal election. They don't have they do have an appointed. I don't know if they vote for their governor. I know usually the governor is appointed, but I think they might vote for their governor. They do have non-voting representation in the House of Representatives. And they but they don't vote in they don't send members of the they don't have states st representatives in Congress other than non-voting representation. There's been a number of states that have well several that have been carved out of other states going back to 1792. Kentucky was part of Virginia. And then in 1820, Maine, a lot of people don't know this, but Maine was part of Massachusetts. Think the state of Maine, you could put all five states into the state of all five other New England states into the state of Maine and have a little, I still have a little extra room. So when Massachusetts jettisoned Maine, They jettisoned about 85% of its property. And the purpose of that in 1820 was that I think Missouri was coming in as a slave state, and Maine had to come in as a free state to try to keep the, it wasn't a balance. I think there were more free states than slave states, but they wanted to keep that level of representation at an equal amount. And then 1863, West Virginia became part of a separate state. So in West Virginia, though, it was interesting. Virginia seceded from the Union in 1861. And under the Constitution, let me just read it. It's in Article 3. I'm sorry. It'd be Article 4. Yeah, Article 4 deals with the states, Article 4 of the U.S. Constitution. In Article 4, Section 3, we read this: new states may be admitted by the Congress into this Union, but no new state shall be formed or erected within the jurisdiction of any other state, nor any state be formed by the junction of two or more states or parts of states without the consent of the legislators of the states concerned, as well as of the Congress. So, in order to carve a state out of, let's say, Maine or Massachusetts, Massachusetts, with a simple majority, has to agree, and then Congress has to agree before it becomes a state. So it's not an easy process. So, but I'm saying this somewhat tongue in cheek, but somewhat serious. I live in what is Belknap County. It's a county of about 72,000 people, except in the nicer weather, when it probably goes up to about over 100,000. We have a lot of seasonal people up here. It's a lakes region, Lake Winnipesaukee. We do have skiing and winter sports, but mainly they don't attract nearly as many as the summer, of course. But Belknap County is a pretty moderately conservative area. We have, I think we have 18 or 19 seats in the House, New Hampshire House, and I think 18 of them are Republicans. That doesn't mean they're all Ron Paul Republicans, but they're Republicans, and most of the towns are pretty conservatively run by Republicans. And I propose that we form a separate state, the state of Belknap. Belknap's named after a minister from the historian pastor, a really honorable guy. So I'd keep that name. And the largest, we have one city in Belknap County, and that's Laconia. Laconia is not a very big city. I don't know if it's more than 12 or 15,000 people. But I would put the county or the capital here in Alton, New Hampshire, which is about 5,000, maybe a little bit less, a little more, somewhere around there. Except in the summertime, it goes way up. I don't know if I want to run for governor, but I'd probably run for Congress. We would have, if you become a state, you would have two U.S. senators, and you'd have one member of the House of Representatives. I think when it comes to that, when the state's admitted, they would have at least one seat in the House, the least popular. So there are several states that have. Vermont has one member of the House in New England. I'm thinking Idaho. I think Idaho has two. Maine has two. New Hampshire has two. I think you have to have over 650,000 to justify a second one. I think that's how it works. But anyway, it would be kind of interesting to become, but I don't know if it would be signed off by Congress. Well, it may be signed off by Congress by a small amount. I know that our New Hampshire delegation, which is all rabid left-winger Democrats, would not sign off on it because they would know that they would not have that much influence. It's interesting about New Hampshire. It's it's considered a purple state. It used to be pretty solid red up until the 80s, and all of the people were moving in, and it was a slow process. People were moving in from Massachusetts and bringing their lefty views in. And when it comes to lefties, their government is sort of their religion, secular religion. It's the humanism is a secular religion, it's a worship of man, the deification of man. And their places of worship would be city halls, government schools, state houses. And so they move up here. They're not really big into the hunting and the fishing. They're into taking over the towns. And a lot of times they'll take over a town that's very conservative because people don't vote, especially in town elections are held in March. It can be wind cold out and it could be snowy. And some people might be down in Florida for that week and they don't get an absentee ballot. And the lefties can get in there and take it. And they can be kind of a little cute about it. They can actually be friendly and decent out when you're out in public, especially in a small town. Well, they almost have to be. And that's what's happened. Now, that's been reversed in many places. In some places, I know here in Alton, and all the elections at the town level are considered nonpartisan, but you kind of know, what party they belong to and how they, for the most part, and where they stand on issues. But that's what happens when just people don't pay attention and get involved. And there's a lot of offices, open seats that go uncontested. And that's where a write-in candidate can actually win. You don't get write-in candidates don't generally do well in, when it comes to state-wide seats. But at a town level, where it is, and some of these seats, for example, planning committee, planning boards, they're important. And budget committees, they're very important. And a lot of people have budget committee. I don't want to sit on that. And they go uncontested. But then you can, and we had a write-in campaign last year's election, and we had some of our conservative-minded people get elected. All you have to do is get 4 or 5 votes, and you're in. So it can be done. I had a chance to speak to a really excellent group in it was a medical freedom group that now is expanding. I'll be looking at things. One thing leads to another, and if the federal governments at every level can take away your medical freedom, they can take away all the freedoms too. So this group is in Boxford, Massachusetts, which is up on the north, not too far from about 30 miles or so from the New Hampshire border. And they asked me to speak about Agenda 21. And when I speak in a given town, there weren't just people from that town. It was a good turnout. I think we had over 80 people, and they were from different parts of the state, mainly in Boxford and surrounding areas. And what I do is when I give a presentation, I try to, you have to give an overview, a nation and even an international overview. How did Agenda 21 start? I mentioned Rio de Janeiro, 1992, UN conference, and then how an agreement becomes soft law instead of a treaty. A treaty has to be voted on. An agreement can simply just be brought back to that given country and then implemented by executive order. I believe it's unconstitutional, but that's how they do it. So instead of saying, hey, here's a treaty we got, and by treaty, we have to reduce our carbon footprint by 90% in 5 years. We have to go solar. We have to, and again, I think these treaties, if it were, it'd still be unconstitutional, but at least people at what the representatives in the Senate or the US Senate would have to vote on it. And that never happened. They just implement it. They just bring it back and say, okay, these are the things we want to do here at the federal level and all of the departments, from Department of Energy to Department, even the military. And then the states get it, and the states say, okay, we're going to do the same thing here. And then the towns get it. And a lot of this stuff is implemented without any voters' support whatsoever. So what I do is I just go on the town's website and look for the committees that might be implementing this. And sure enough, Boxford had what they call green communities. And I said, this is the problem. And there was actually a couple of opportunities. There was a couple of open seats on the green committee. And I said, that's where you should be. You people who are opposing this need to get on those committees and block whatever you can block. If nothing else, be a thorn in their side. And I did point out that the vast majority of people who support that or are implementing this aren't working directly under George Soros's Soros's supervision. These are ideologues. In some cases, they're pay to players. Hey, I have a contracting company and I'm going to build the solar panels and I'm going to build the bike paths and I'm going to do all this stuff. You know, we're going to have all this money for green building, green, low carbon footprint homes. So they're making money. They're not really ideologues. They're making money. They sound like ideologues, but that's just money for them. They don't care. And then there's the ideologue who, oh, I'm going to ride my bike. I'm going to save the planet. I'm going to do the ridiculous. I'm going to get a solar panels on my house, and it's going to save the planet. And they don't tell you that solar panels aren't made from fairy dust, and you know they take minerals and metals, and it takes a lot of so-called dirty technology to build a solar panel. And I'm going to put a bike path. We're going to build a bike path with rails to trails and all this kind of thing. And by the way, I'm not so much against bike paths or paths in general. I mean, I like taking my dogs for a walk in the paths. So it makes it easier to have to go without a path. But a lot of these so-called bike paths are built on busy roads that were never designed for bicycles. You know, if you hit an interstate, usually you'll see a sign that says pedestrians and bikes illegal. I mean, unless your car breaks down, you can't walk on the highway and you can't take your bike on the highway. Why? Because the cars are going too fast. It's dangerous. That might change, though. I wonder how quickly they'll put bike paths on interstates. I'm sure that's been proposed, although I haven't heard any direct proposal. But some of these bike paths, I'll give you an example in Boston. And by the way, if you see bike paths in your city or even your town that are on the roads, you can almost expect that Agenda 21 is being implemented in that town. That's one dead giveaway right there. They have something they call it a street diet or a complete street, sustainable street. So you might get say you have two lanes going in either direction. So you come back, if you haven't been to that town, let's say you haven't been to that particular town, that's just how you know. You come back a year later, now there's just one lane in each direction, and there's bike paths, and it's like, well, what happened here? And then you'll see where they put like traffic islands and make it a little narrower as you drive to the track. Those are called calming areas. So you're slowing down. And if you put a bike path where it was a busy road, there'd be obviously more bike riders. And one thing you'll see in these towns or cities that have bike paths everywhere on these busy roads are these things called ghost bikes. Now you'll see somebody will get an old bicycle spray painted white, and you'll see flowers or little mementos of somebody. Somebody was killed on that bike path because they were riding on a road that wasn't designed for bikes, and then they make the road narrower, and a lot of bike riders aren't that conscientious of the traffic. And I did a little research a couple of years ago. It looked like from whatever year, I think it was 14 or 12 up until the early 2020s, the number of bike fatalities has tripled. And that makes sense. The more people you put on bikes, the more potential accidents, but tripling is quite a bit. And it was interesting. The town of Brookline is a wealthy bedroom community of Boston. And this would be a few years ago. There were two doctors, I think they were pretty well known in their fields. And they bicycled to where the hospital district is. The hospital district of Boston is, it abuts Brookline. You do have some wooded areas around there. You have the Fenway, what was called the Emerald Necklace. But you have the Jamaica Way, which is a road that was built, I think, in the 30s or 20s, very narrow road. And you have, it's supposed to be just for cars. You might have pickup trucks, non-commercial vehicles. But it's always winding. And they get bike paths on these and it's dangerous. And sometimes they don't actually have a bike path. They just have a sign with that tells you it's a bike path. They might get spray paint and spray paint bicycle. So, oh, this is a bike path, but it really isn't. And then at some point, the bike path will end, you know, at a red light, or, you know, you're driving, you're bicycling, next thing you know, well, where's the bike path? You know, the bike path path ends where that Mack truck begins. It's very dangerous. And again, bikes are great exercise, and it is a limited means of travel. I say limited because you really can't use it in the snow, pouring rain, probably not the best thing. It might be okay to take a little errand down the road. We get a few things with your basket. You really can't do much week-long shopping for the family. You can't, put 10, 12 bags of groceries or bring back wood from or pellets, wood pellets, or other things that you might get in your travels when you run errands. So it has limited, but the people on the Greenies think it's going to be, the technology of the future. And bikes do indeed predate the internal combustion engine, at least by a little bit. But they're not going to save you. In fact, if you have to rely on a bike, then you're probably in pretty tough shape. Yeah. Anyway, so secession. Oh, I was going to talk about treason too. I got a few minutes to go. Treason is defined in the Constitution in Article 3. And I've done a little research. It's only been about 40 people in the country have been tried for treason. And also, states over the years have tried people for treason. The John Brown, he was in a few of his gangsters that had the raid on Harper's Ferry. Now that became part of West Virginia. But they were tried for treason against Virginia, not against the United States. So here it is, Article 3, Section 3. Treason against the United States shall consist only in leveling war against them or adhering to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort. No person shall be convicted of treason unless on the testimony of two witnesses to the same overt act or in the confession in open court. The Congress shall have the power to declare the punishment of treason, but no attainder of treason shall work corruption of blood or forfeiture except during the life of the person attained. So an attainder of treason. So if I was found guilty of treason and executed, my estate would not necessarily be confiscated. I think that's what it means, attainder of corruption of blood. And of course, my family would not be guilty. If I'm found guilty and they're not involved, they wouldn't be responsible. And my assets would not necessarily be seized by the government. 40 people have been tried. Aaron Burr was one of the most famous, or I should say infamous cases. He was acquitted. A lot of people thought he still committed treason. He was working with foreign governments to seize parts of the territory of the United States. That was the goal. And I think you only had one person that was a witness, so you couldn't find him guilty. We did have, during the Civil War, there were lots of people clamoring that a lot of the Confederate leaders be tried for treason. A lot of the Union generals gave amnesty to the soldiers. They said, as long as you don't take up arms, go home. And sometimes they kept their weapons. They didn't even take their weapons from them. But some of the leaders, like Jeff Davis, he spent 2 years in prison, and he was granted amnesty. And then Andrew Johnson gave general amnesty. But they did have that provision in the 14th Amendment that dealt with treason, I should say insurrection. But even they, if a person had who had taken an oath to the United States Constitution, then got involved in the Confederate government, either as an officer or elected official, they couldn't run for office. But they could, without the approval, I think it was 2/3 of Congress could waive that. Let me just double check on that, because there's been so much misunderstanding. They think somehow this applies to Trump. Of course, it doesn't. Insurrection. He was ridiculous, the thought he was involved in the insurrection. Anyway, I think I'm running out of time here. I am. I only get a few seconds. Anyway, we'll pick this up next week. With you listening to Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Shurtleff. And until next week, may God richly bless you.